Taleb said.
Bright Lord Dalinar, Bashin said. The lads took down one of those shell heads before being killed themselves. Sir, you need to see this. Something has changed.
Shallan shivered, feeling sodden and cold. She'd brought clothing that should last well in the rain, of course, but that didn't mean standing out here was comfortable. Though they wore coats, nobody else seemed to pay much heed. Likely they took it for granted that during the weeping you were going to get soaked. That was something else for which her sheltered childhood had not prepared her. Dalinar did not object as Shallan joined him in walking toward a nearby bridge, one of the more mobile ones run by Kaladin's bridge teams, who wore raincoats and front-brimmed caps. A group of soldiers on the other side of the bridge dragged something across, pushing a little wave of water before it. A Parshendi corpse. Shallan had only seen the one that she'd found with Kaladin in the chasm. She'd done a sketch of that earlier, and this one looked very different. It had hair. Well, a kind of hair. Leaning down, she found that it was thicker than human hair and felt too slick. Was that the right word? The face was marbled, like that of a parchment, this one with prominent red streaks through the black. The body was lean and strong, and something seemed to grow under the skin of the exposed arms, peeking out. Shallan prodded at it and found it hard and ridged, like a crab shell. In fact, the face was crusted with a kind of thin, bumpy carapace just above the cheeks and running back around the sides of the head.
"This isn't a type we've seen before, sir," Bashin said to Dalinar. "Look at those ridges. Sir, some of the lads that were killed, they had burn marks on them, in the rain. Shakiest thing I've ever seen."
Shallan looked up at them. "What do you mean by a type, Bashin?"
"Some Parshendi have hair," the man said.
He was a dark eyes, but clearly well-respected, though he didn't bear an obvious military rank.
"Others have carapace. The ones we met with King Gavilar long ago, they were shaped different from the ones we fight."
"They have specialized subspecies," Shallan said. "Some Kremlings were like that, working in a hive with different specializations and varied forms."
"We might be depleting their numbers,"
Dalinar said to Bashin,
"forcing them to send out their equivalent of Light Eyes to fight."
"And the burns, Dalinar?"
Bashin said, scratching his head under his hat. Shallan reached out to check the Parshendi's eye color. Did they have light eyes and dark like humans? She lifted the eyelid. The eye beneath was completely red. She screamed, jumping back, pulling her hand up to her chest. The soldiers cursed, looking around, and Dalinar's shard blade appeared in his hand a few seconds later.
"Red eyes," Shallan whispered. "It's happening."
"The red eyes are just a legend."
"Yasna had an entire notebook of references to this, Bright Lord," Shallan said, shivering. "The Voidbringers are here. Time is short."
"Throw the body into the chasm,"
Dalinar said to his men.
"I doubt we'd be able to easily burn it. Keep everyone alert. Be prepared for an attack tonight. Bright Lord!"
Shallan spun as a hulking, armored figure came up, rainwater trailing down his silvery plate.
"We've found another one, sir,"
Taleb said.
"Dead?"
Dalinar said.
"No, sir,"
the shard-bearer said, pointing.
"He walked right up to us, sir. He's sitting on a rock over there."
Dalinar looked to Shallan, who shrugged. Dalinar started off in the direction Taleb had pointed.
"Sir,"
Taleb said, voice resonating inside his helm.
"Should you—"
Dalinar ignored the warning, and Shallan hastened after him, collecting Vatha and his two guards.
"Should you head back?"
Vatha said under his breath to her. Storms, but that face of his looked dangerous in the dim light, even if his voice was respectful. She couldn't help but still see him as the man who had almost killed her back in the unclaimed hills.
I will be safe, Shallan replied softly.
You might have a blade, Brightness, but you could still die to an arrow in the back.
Unlikely, in this rain, she said. He fell in behind her, offering no further objection. He was trying to do the job she had assigned him. Unfortunately, she was discovering that she didn't much like being guarded. They found the Parshendi after a hike through the rain. The rock he sat on was about as high as a man was tall. He seemed to have no weapons, and about 100 Alethi soldiers stood around the base of his seat, spears pointed upward. Shallan couldn't make out much more as he sat across the chasm from them, a portable bridge in place to his plateau.
Has he said anything?
Dalinar said softly as Taleb stepped up.
Not that I know of, the shard bearer said. He just sits there.
Shallan peered across the chasm toward the solitary Parshendi man. He stood up and shaded his eyes against the rain. The soldiers below shuffled, spears rising into more threatening positions.
Scar? The Parshendi's voice called. Scar? Is that you? And Leighton?
Nearby, one of Dalinar's bridgeman guards cursed. He ran across the bridge, and several other bridgemen followed. They returned a moment later. Shallan crowded in closely to hear what their leader whispered to Dalinar.
It's him, sir, Scar said. He's changed, but storm me for a fool if I'm wrong. It's him, Shen. He ran bridges with us for months and vanished. Now he's here. He says he wants to surrender to you.
79. Toward the Center. Question. For what essential must we strive? Answer. The essential of preservation, to shelter a seed of humanity through the coming storm. Question. What cost must we bear? Answer. The cost is irrelevant. Mankind must survive. Our burden is that of the species, and all other considerations are but dust by comparison. From the diagram, Catechism of the Back of the Flowered Painting, Paragraph 1. Dalinar stood with hands behind his back, waiting in his command tent, listening to the patter of rain on the cloth. The floor of the tent was wet. You couldn't avoid that in the weeping. He knew that from miserable experience. He'd been out on more than one military excursion during this time of year. It was the day after they'd discovered the Parshendi on the plains, both the dead one and the one the bridgeman called Shen, or Relaine, as he had said his name was. Dalinar himself had allowed the man to be armed. Shallan claimed that all Parshmen were Voidbringers in embryo. He had ample reason to believe her word, considering what she'd shown him. But what was he to do? The radiance had returned, the Parshendi had manifested red eyes. Dalinar felt as if he were trying to stop a dam from breaking, all the while not knowing where the leaks were actually coming from. The tent flaps parted and Adolin ducked in, escorting Navani. She hung her storm coat on the rack beside the flap, and Adolin grabbed a towel and began drying his hair and face. Adolin was betrothed to a member of the Knights Radiant. She says she's not one yet, Dalinar reminded himself. That made sense. One could be a trained spearman without being a soldier. One implied skill, the other a position. They are bringing the Parshendi man? Dalinar asked. Yes, Navani said, sitting down in one of the room's chairs. Adolin didn't take a seat, but found a pitcher of filtered rainwater and poured himself a cup. He tapped the side of the tin cup as he drank. They were restless, all of them, following the discovery of red-eyed Parshendi. After no attack had come that night, Dalinar had pushed the three armies into another day of marching. Slowly they approached the middle of the plains, at least as Shallan's projections indicated. They were already well beyond the regions that scouts had explored. Now they had to rely on the young woman's maps. The flaps opened again, and Taleb marched in with the prisoner. Dalinar had put the High Lord and his personal guard in charge of this Relaine, as he didn't like how defensive the bridgemen were about him. He did invite their lieutenants, Scar and the horn-eater cook they called Rock, to come to the interrogation, and those two entered after Taleb and his men. General Kahl and Renarin were in another tent with Aladar and Roian, going over tactics for when they approached the Parshendi encampment. Nabani sat up, leaning forward, narrowing her eyes at the prisoner. Shallan had wanted to attend, but Dalinar had promised to have everything written down for her. The Stormfather had given her some sense, fortunately, and she hadn't insisted. Having too many of them near this spy felt dangerous to Dalinar. He had a vague recollection of the Parshmen guard who had occasionally joined the men of Bridge Four. Parshmen were practically invisible, but once this one had started carrying a spear, he had become instantly noticeable. Not that there had been anything else distinctive about him. Same squat Parshmen body, marbled skin, dull eyes. This creature before him was nothing like that. He was a full Parshendi warrior, complete with orange-red skull plate and armored carapace at chest, thighs, and outer arms. He was as tall as an Alethi, and more muscular. Though he carried no weapon, the guards still treated him as if he were the most dangerous thing on this plateau, and perhaps he was just that. As he stepped up, he saluted Dalinar, hand to chest, like the other bridgemen. He bore their tattoo on his forehead, reaching up and blending into his skull plate. "Sit," Dalinar ordered, nodding toward a stool at the center of the room. Relaine obeyed. "I'm told," Dalinar said, "that you refuse to tell us anything about the Parshendi plans."
"I don't know them," Relaine said.
He had the rhythmic intonations common to the Parshendi, but he spoke Alethi very well, better than any Parshman Dalinar had heard.
"You were a spy," Dalinar said, hands clasped behind his back, trying to loom over the Parshendi,
but staying far enough away that the man could not grab him without Adolin getting in the way first.
"Yes, sir."
"For how long?"
"About 3 years," Relaine said. "In various war camps."
Nearby, Taleb, faceplate up, turned and raised an eyebrow at Dalinar.
"You answer me when I ask," Dalinar said. "But not the others. Why?" "You are my commanding officer," Relaine said.
"You're Parshendi."
"I..."
The man looked down at the ground, shoulders bowing. He raised a hand to his head, feeling at the ridge of skin just where his skull plate ended.
"Something is very wrong, sir. Eshonai's voice, on the plateau that day, when she came to meet with Prince Adolin."
"Eshonai," Dalinar prompted. "The Parshendi shard-bearer?" Nearby, Navani scribbled on a pad of paper, writing down each word spoken.
"Yes. She was my commander. But now..."
He looked up, and despite the alien skin and the strange way of speaking, Dalinar recognized grief in this man's face. Terrible grief.
"Sir, I have reason to believe that everyone I know, everyone I loved, has been destroyed. Monsters left in their place. The listeners, the Parshendi, may be no more. I have nothing left."
"Yes, you do," Scar said from outside the ring of guards. "You're Bridge Four."
Relaine looked at him.
"I'm a traitor."
"Ah," Rock said. "His little problem can be fixed."
Dalinar gestured to quiet the bridgeman. He glanced at Navani, who nodded for him to continue.
"Tell me," Dalinar said, "how you hid among the Parshmen." "I..."
"Soldier,"
Dalinar barked,
"that was an order."
Relaine sat up. Amazingly, he seemed to want to obey, as if he needed something to lend him strength.
"Sir," Relaine said, "it's just something my people can do. We choose a form based on what we need, the job required of us. Dull form, one of those forms
looks a lot like a parshman. Hiding among them is easy.
We account our parshmen with precision, Navani said.
Yes, Relaine replied, and we are noticed, but rarely questioned. Who questions when you find an extra sphere lying on the ground? It's not something suspicious, it's merely fortune.
Dangerous territory, Dalinar thought, noticing the change in Relaine's voice, the beat to which he was speaking. This man did not like how the Parshmen were treated.
You spoke of the Parshendi, Dalinar said. This has to do with the red eyes?
Relaine nodded.
What does it mean, soldier? Dalinar asked.
It means our gods have returned, Relaine whispered.
Who are your gods?
They are the souls of those ancient, those who gave of themselves to destroy.
A different rhythm to his words this time, slow and reverent. He looked up at Dalinar.
They hate you and your kind, sir. This new form they have given my people, it is something terrible. It will bring something terrible.
Can you lead us to the Parshendi city? Dalinar asked.
Relaine's voice changed again, a different rhythm.
My people...
You said they are gone, Dalinar said.
They might be, Relaine said. I got close enough to see an army. Tens of thousands. But surely they left some in other forms. The elderly, the young. Who watches our children?
Dalinar stepped up to Relaine, waving back Adolin, who raised an anxious hand. He stooped down, laying an arm on the Parshendi man's shoulder.
Soldier, Dalinar said, if what you're telling me is correct, then the most important thing you can do is lead us to your people. I will see that the non-combatants are protected. My word of honor on it. If something terrible is happening to your people, you need to help me stop it.
Relaine
took a deep breath.
Yes, sir,
he said to a different rhythm. Meet with Shallan Devar, Dalinar said. Describe the route to her, and get us a map. Taleb, you may release the prisoner into the custody of Bridge 4. The old blood shardbearer nodded. As the group of them left, letting in a gust of rainy wind, Dalinar sighed and sat down beside Navani.
You trust his word?
I don't know, Dalinar said. But something did shake that man, Navani, soundly.
He's Parshendi, she said. You may be misreading his body language.
Dalinar leaned forward, clasping his hands before him.
The countdown, he asked.
3 days away, Navani said. 3 days before light day.
So little time. We hasten our pace, he said. Inward, toward the center. And destiny.
Mapped on the journey to the center. Mapped while lost in the chasms. Note, eastern side of the plains is much more eroded than this. Light areas are plateaus packed closely together. Dark areas represent plateaus less densely packed. I know you wanted me to draw every plateau, but shadows, woman. Even I'm not that crazy. 80. To fight the rain. You must become king of everything. From the diagram, Tenets of Instruction, back of the footboard, paragraph 1.
Shallan fought against the wind, pulling her storm coat, stolen from a soldier, close around her. She struggled up the slick incline. Brightness? Gaz asked. He grabbed his cap to keep it from blowing free. Are you certain you want to do this? Of course I am, Shallan said. Whether or not what I'm doing is wise, well, that's another story. These winds were unusual for the weeping, which was supposed to be a period of placid rainfall, a time for contemplating the Almighty, a respite from high storms. Maybe things were different out here in the Stormlands. She pulled herself up the rocks. The shattered plains had grown increasingly rough as the armies traveled inward, now on the 8th day of the expedition, following Shallan's map, created with the help of Relaine, the former bridgeman. Shallan crested the rock formation and found the view that the scouts had described. Vatha and Gaz stomped up behind her, muttering about the cold. The heart of the shattered plains extended before Shallan, the inner plateaus never explored by men. "It's here," she said. Gaz scratched at the socket beneath his eye patch. "Rocks?" "Yes, Guardsman Gaz," Shallan said. "Rocks. Beautiful, wonderful rocks." In the distance, she saw shadows draped in a veil of misty rain. Seen together in a group like this, it was unmistakable. This was a city. A city covered over with centuries' worth of creme, like children's blocks, dribbled with many coats of melted wax. To the innocent eye, it undoubtedly looked much like the rest of the shattered plains, but it was, oh, so much more. It was proof. Even this formation Shallan stood upon had probably once been a building. Weathered on the stormward side, dribbled with creme down the leeward side to create the bulbous, uneven slope they had climbed.
"Brightness!"
She ignored the voices from down below, instead waving impatiently for the spyglass. Gaz handed it to her, and she raised it to inspect the plateaus ahead. Unfortunately, the thing had fogged up on one end. She tried to rub it clean, rain washing over her, but the fog was on the inside. Blasted device.
"Brightness?" Gaz asked. "Shouldn't we, listen to what they're saying down below?"
"More twisted Parshendi spotted," Shallan said, raising the spyglass again. "Wouldn't the designer of the thing have built it to be sealed on the inside, to prevent moisture from getting in?" Gaz and Vatha stepped back as several members of Bridge 4 reached the top of the incline.
"Brightness," one of the bridgemen said. "High Prince Dalinar has withdrawn the vanguard and ordered a secure perimeter on the plateau behind us."
He was a tall, handsome man, whose arms seemed entirely too long for his body. Shallan looked with dissatisfaction at the inner plateaus.
"Brightness," the bridgeman continued reluctantly. "He did say that if you wouldn't come, he would send Adolin to, cart you back over his shoulder."
"I would like to see him do that," Shallan said. "It did sound kind of romantic. The sort of thing you'd read of in a novel." "He's that worried about the Parshendi?"
Relaine says we're practically to their home plateau, Brightness. Too many of their patrols have been spotted. Please."
"We need to get in there," Shallan said, pointing. "That's where the secrets are."
"Brightness."
"Very well," she said, turning and hiking down the incline. She slipped, which did not help her dignity, but Vatha caught her arm before she tumbled onto her face. Once down, they quickly crossed this smaller plateau, joining scouts who were jogging back toward the bulk of the army. Relaine claimed to know nothing himself of the Oathgate, or even really much about the city, which he called Narak instead of Stormseat. He said his people had only taken up permanent residence here following the Alethi invasion. During the push inward, Dalinar's soldiers had spotted an increasing number of Parshendi and had clashed with them in brief skirmishes. General Kahl thought that the forays had been intended to draw the army off course, though how they would figure that Shallan didn't know. But she did know she was growing tired of feeling damp all the time. They had been out here nearly 2 weeks now, and some of the soldiers had begun to mutter that the army would need to return to the war camp soon, or risk not getting back before the high storms resumed. Shallan stalked across the bridge and passed several lines of spearmen setting up behind short, wave-like ridges in the stone, likely the footings of old walls. She found Dalinar and the other High Princes in a tent set up at the center of camp. It was one of six identical tents, and it wasn't immediately obvious which one held the four High Princes. A safety precaution of some sort, she assumed. As Shallan stepped in out of the rain, she intruded upon their conversation.
"The current plateau does have some very favorable defense positions," Aladar said, gesturing toward a map set out on the travel table before them. "I prefer our chances against an assault here to moving deeper."
"And if we move deeper," Dalinar said with a grunt, "we'll be in danger of getting split during an attack, half on one plateau, half on the other."
"But do they even need to attack?" Roian said. "If I were them, I'd just form up out there as if to prepare for an attack, but then I wouldn't. I'd stall, forcing my enemy to get stuck out here waiting for an attack until the high storms returned."
"He makes a valid point," Aladar admitted.
"Trust a coward," Sabariel said, "to know the smartest way to stay out of fighting."
He sat with Pallona beside the table, eating fruit and smiling pleasantly.
"I am not a coward," Roian said, forming fists at his sides. "I didn't mean it as an insult," Sabariel said. "My insults are far more pithy. That was a compliment. If I had my way, I'd hire you to run all wars, Roian. I suspect there would be far fewer casualties, and the price of undergarments would double once soldiers were told that you were in charge. I'd make a fortune."
Shallan handed her dripping coat to a servant, then took off her cap and began drying her hair with a towel. "We need to press closer to the center of the plains," she said. "Roian is right. I refuse to let us bivouac. The Parshendi will just wait us out." The others looked to her.
"I wasn't aware," Dalinar said, "that you decided our tactics, Brightness Shallan."
"It's our own fault, Dalinar," Sabariel said, "for giving her so much leeway. We probably should have tossed her off the pinnacle weeks ago, the moment she arrived at that meeting."
Shallan was stirring up a retort as the tent flaps parted and Adolin trudged in, shard plate streaming. He pushed up his faceplate.
Storms! He looked so good, even when you could see only half his face. She smiled.
"They are definitely agitated," Adolin said.
He saw her and gave her a quick smile before clinking up to the table.
"There are at least 10,000 of those twisted Parshendi out there, moving in groups around the plateaus."
10,000? Aladar said with a grunt. "We can take 10,000. Even with them having the terrain advantage, even if we have to assault rather than defend, we should handle that many with ease. We have over 30,000.
"This is what we came to do," Dalinar said.
He looked at Shallan, who blushed at her forwardness earlier.
"Your portal, the one you think is out here, where would it be?"
"Closer to the city," Shallan said.
"What are those red eyes?" Roian asked. He looked very uncomfortable. "And the flashes of light they cause when they fight. Storms, when I spoke earlier, I didn't mean that I wanted us to go farther. I was just worried at what the Parshendi would do. There's no easy way to do this, is there?"
"So far as Relaine has said," Navani said from her seated position at the side of the room, "only their soldiers can jump between plateaus. But we can assume the new form capable of it as well. They can flee us if we push forward."
Dalinar shook his head. "They set up on the plains, rather than fleeing all those years ago, because they knew it was their best chance for survival. On the open, unbroken rock of the Stormlands, they could be hunted and destroyed. Out here, they have the advantage. They won't abandon it now. Not if they think they can fight us."
"If we want to make them fight, then," Aladar said, "we need to threaten their homes. I guess we really should press toward the city.
Shallan relaxed. Each step closer to the center, by Relaine's explanations they were but half a day away, got her closer to the Oath Gate. Dalinar leaned forward, spreading his hands to the sides, his shadow falling on the battle maps.
Very well. I did not come all this way to timidly wait upon Parshendi whims. We'll march inward tomorrow, threaten their city, and force them to engage.
The closer we get, Sabariel noted, the more likely we are to become cut off without hope of retreat.
Dalinar didn't respond, but Shallan knew what he was thinking.
We gave up hope of retreat days ago.
A flight across days and days of plateaus would be a disaster if the Parshendi decided to harry. The Alethi fought here, and they won, seizing the shelter of Narak. That was their only option.
Dalinar adjourned the meeting and the High Princes left, surrounded by groups of aides holding umbrellas. Shallan waited as Dalinar caught her eyes. In moments, only she, Dalinar, Adolin, and Navani remained. Navani walked up to Dalinar, taking his arm with both of hers, an intimate posture.
This portal of yours, Dalinar said.
Yes? Shallan asked. Dalinar looked up and met her eyes.
How real is it?
Yasna was convinced it was completely real. She was never wrong.
This would be a storming bad time for her to break her record, he said softly. I agreed to press forward in part because of your exploration.
Thank you.
I did not do it for scholarship, Dalinar said. From what Navani tells me, this portal offers a unique opportunity for retreat. I had hoped to defeat the Parshendi before danger overtook us, whatever it was. Judging by what we've seen, danger has arrived early.
Shallan nodded.
Tomorrow is the last day of the countdown, Dalinar said, scribbled on the walls during high storms. Whatever it is, whatever it was, we meet it tomorrow. And you are my backup plan, Shallan Devar. You will find this portal and you will make it work. If the evil overwhelms us, your pathway will be our escape. You may be the only chance that our armies, and indeed Alethkar itself, have for survival.
Days passed, and Kaladin refused to let the rain overcome him. He limped through the camp, using a crutch that Lopin had fetched for him, despite objecting that it was too soon for Kaladin to be up and about. The place was still empty, save for the occasional parshman lugging wood from the forests outside, or carrying sacks of grain. The camp didn't get any news about the expedition. The king was probably being sent word via span reed, but he didn't share it with everyone else. Storms, this place feels eerie, Kaladin thought, limping past deserted barracks, rain pattering against the umbrella that Lopin had tied to Kaladin's crutch. It worked. Kind of. He passed rain spren, like blue candles sprouting from the ground, each with a single eye in the center of its top. Creepy things. Kaladin had always disliked them. He fought the rain. Did that make any sense? It seemed that the rain wanted him to stay inside, so he went out. The rain wanted him to give in to the despair, so he forced himself to think. Growing up, he'd had Tien to help lighten the gloom. Now even thinking of Tien increased that gloom instead. Though he couldn't avoid it, the weeping reminded him of his brother. Of laughter when the darkness threatened, of cheerful joy and carefree optimism. Those images warred with ones of Tien's death. Kaladin squeezed his eyes shut, trying to banish that memory, of the frail young man, barely trained, being cut down. Tien's own company of soldiers had put him at the front as a distraction, a sacrifice to slow the enemy. Kaladin set his jaw, opening his eyes. No more moping. He would not whine or wallow. Yes, he'd lost Syl. He'd lost many loved ones during his life. He would survive this agony as he had survived the others. He continued his limping circuit of the barracks. He did this 4 times a day. Sometimes Lopin came with him, but today Kaladin was alone. He splashed through puddles of water and found himself smiling because he wore the boots Shallan had stolen from him. "I never did believe she was a horn-eater," he thought. "I need to make sure she knows that." He stopped, leaning on the crutch and looking out through the rain toward the shattered plains. He couldn't see far. The haze of rainfall prevented that. "You come back safely," he thought to those out there. "All of you. This time I can't help you if something goes wrong." Rock, Teft, Dalinar, Adolin, Shallan, everyone in Bridge 4, all out on their own. How different a place would the world be if Kaladin had been a better man? If he'd used his powers and had returned to the war camp with Shallan full of stormlight? He had been so close to revealing what he could do. "You'd been thinking that for weeks," he thought to himself. "You'd never have done it. You were too scared." He hated admitting it, but it was true. Well, if his suspicions about Shallan were true, perhaps Dalinar would have his radiant anyway. Maybe she would make a better run of it than Kaladin had. He continued on his limping way, rounding back to Bridge 4's barrack. He stopped when he saw a fine carriage pulled by horses bearing the king's livery, waiting in front of it. Kaladin cursed, hobbling forward. Lopin ran out to meet him, not carrying an umbrella. A lot of people gave up on trying to stay dry during the weeping.
"Lopin," Kaladin said. "What?" "He's waiting for you, Goncho," Lopin said, gesturing urgently. "The king himself."
Kaladin limped more quickly toward his room. The door was open and Kaladin peeked in to find King Elokar standing inside, looking about the small chamber. Moash guarded the door, and Taka, a former member of the king's guard, stood nearer to the king.
"Your Majesty?" Kaladin asked.
"Ah," the king said. "Bridge man."
Elokar's cheeks were flushed. He'd been drinking, though he didn't appear drunk. Kaladin understood. With Dalinar and that disapproving glare of his gone for a time, it was probably nice to relax with a bottle. When Kaladin had first met the king, he'd thought Elokar lacked regality. Now, oddly, he thought Elokar did look like a king. It wasn't that the king had changed. The man still had his imperious features, with that overly large nose and condescending manner. The change was in Kaladin. The things he'd once associated with kingship, honor, strength of arms, nobility, had been replaced with Elokar's less inspiring attributes.
"This is really all that Dalinar assigns one of his officers?"
Elokar asked, gesturing around the room.
"That man. He expects everyone to live with his own austerity. It is as if he's completely forgotten how to enjoy himself."
Kaladin looked to Moash, who shrugged, shardplate clinking. The king cleared his throat.
"I was told you were too weak to make the trip to see me. I see that might not be the case."
"I'm sorry, Your Majesty," Kaladin said. "I'm not well, but I walk the camp each day to rebuild my strength. I feared that my weakness and appearance might be offensive to the throne."
"You've learned to speak politically, I see," the king said, folding his arms. "The truth is that my command is meaningless, even to a Dark Eyes. I no longer have authority in the eyes of men."
"Great. Here we go again."
The king waved curtly.
"Out, you other two. I'd speak to this man alone."
Moash glanced at Kaladin, looking concerned, but Kaladin nodded. With reluctance, Moash and Taka walked out, shutting the door, leaving them to the light of a few dwindling spheres that the king set out. Soon those wouldn't have any stormlight to them at all. It had been too long without a high storm. They'd need to break out candles and oil lamps.
"How did you know?" the king asked him. "How to be a hero?"
"Your Majesty?" Kaladin asked, sagging against his crutch.
"A hero," the king said, waving flippantly. Everyone loves you, Bridgeman. You saved Dalinar, you fought Shardbearers, you came back after falling into the storming chasms. How do you do it? How do you know?
It's really just luck, Your Majesty.
No, no, the king said. He began pacing. It's a pattern, though I can't figure it out. When I try to be strong, I make a fool of myself. When I try to be merciful, people walk all over me. When I try to listen to counsel, it turns out I've picked the wrong men. When I try to do everything on my own, Dalinar has to take over, lest I ruin the kingdom. How do people know what to do? Why don't I know what to do? I was born to this office, given the throne by the Almighty himself. Why would he give me the title but not the capacity? It defies reason. And yet everyone seems to know things that I do not. My father could rule even the likes of Sadeus. Men loved Gavilar, feared him, and served him all at once. I can't even get a Dark Eyes to obey a command to come visit the palace. Why doesn't this work? What do I have to do?
Kaladin stepped back, shocked at the frankness. Why are you asking me this, Your Majesty?
Because you know the secret, the king said, still pacing. I've seen how your men regard you. I've heard how people speak of you. You're a hero, Bridgeman.
He stopped, then walked up to Kaladin, taking him by the arms.
Can you teach me?
Kaladin regarded him, baffled.
I want to be a king like my father was, Elokar said. I want to lead men. I want them to respect me.
Kaladin swallowed. I don't know if that's possible, Your Majesty. Elokar narrowed his eyes at Kaladin.
So you do still speak your mind, even after the trouble it brought you. Tell me, do you think me a bad king, Bridgeman?
Yes.
The king drew in a sharp breath, still holding Kaladin by the arms. I could do it right here, Kaladin realized. Strike the king down, put Dalinar on the throne. No hiding, no secrets, no cowardly assassination. A fight, him and me. That seemed a more honest way to be about it. Sure, Kaladin would probably be executed, but he found that didn't bother him. Should he do it? For the good of the kingdom? He could imagine Dalinar's anger, Dalinar's disappointment. Death didn't bother Kaladin, but failing Dalinar, storms. The king let go and stalked away.
Well, I did ask, he muttered to himself. I merely have to win you over as well. I will figure this out. I will be a king to be remembered.
Or you could do what is best for Alethkar, Kaladin said, and step down. The king stopped in place. He turned on Kaladin, expression darkening.
Do not overstep yourself, Bridgeman. Bah! I should never have come here.
I agree, Kaladin said. He found this entire experience surreal. Elokar made to leave. He stopped at the door, not looking at Kaladin.
When you came, the shadows went away.
The shadows?
I saw them in mirrors, in the corners of my eyes. I could swear I even heard them whispering. But you frightened them. I haven't seen them since. There's something about you. Don't try to deny it.
The king looked to him.
I'm sorry for what I did to you. I watched you fight to help Adolin, and then I saw you defend Renarin. And I grew jealous. There you were, such a champion, so loved, and everyone hates me. I should have gone to fight myself. Instead, I overreacted to your challenge of Amaram. You weren't the one who ruined our chance against Sadeus. It was me. Dalinar was right. Again. I'm so tired of him being right and me being wrong. In light of that, I am not at all surprised that you find me a bad king.
Elokar pushed open the door,
and left. 81. The Last Day. The unmade are a deviation, a flare, a conundrum that may not be worth your time. You cannot help but think of them. They are fascinating. Many are mindless, like the spren of human emotions, only much more nasty. I do believe a few can think, however. From the diagram, book of the second desk drawer, paragraph 14. Dalinar strode from the tent into a subtle rain, joined by Navani and Shallan. The rain sounded softer out here than it had inside the tent, where the drops had drummed upon the fabric. They had marched farther inward all that morning, bringing them to the very heart of the ruined plateaus. They were close now, so close they had the Parshendi's full attention. It was happening. An attendant offered an umbrella to each person leaving the tent, but Dalinar waved his away. If his men had to stand in this, he'd join them. He'd be soaked by the end of this day anyway. He strode through the ranks, following bridgemen in storm coats who led the way with sapphire lanterns. It was still day, but the thick cloud cover rendered everything dim. He used blue light to identify himself. Roian and Aladar, seeing that Dalinar had eschewed an umbrella, stepped out into the rain with him. Sabariel, of course, stayed underneath his. They reached the edge of the mass of troops, who had formed up in a large oval, facing outward. He knew his soldiers well enough to sense their anxiety. They stood too stiffly, with no shuffling or stretching. They were also silent, not chattering to distract themselves, not even griping. The only voices he heard were occasional barked orders as officers trimmed the lines. Dalinar soon saw what was causing the uneasiness. Glowing red eyes amassed on the next plateau. They hadn't glowed before. Red eyes, yes, but not with those uncanny glows. In the dim light, the Parshendi bodies were indistinct, no more than shadows. The crimson eyes hovered like Taln's scar, like spheres in the darkness, deeper in color than any ruby. Parshendi beards often bore bits of gemstone woven into them in patterns, but today, those didn't glow. Too long without a high storm, Dalinar thought. Even the gems in Alethi's spheres, cut with facets and so able to hold light longer, had almost all failed by this point of the weeping, though larger gemstones might last another week or so. They had entered the darkest part of the year, the time when stormlight did not shine.
"Oh, almighty," Roian whispered, looking at those red eyes. "Oh, by the names of God himself, what have you brought us to, Dalinar?"
"Can you do anything to help?" Dalinar asked softly, looking to Shallan, who stood beneath her umbrella at his side, her guards just behind. Face pale, she shook her head.
"I'm sorry."
"The Knights Radiant were warriors," Dalinar said very softly.
"If they were, then I've got a long way to go."
"Go then," Dalinar told the girl. "When there is an opening in the fighting, find that pathway to Urethiru, if it exists. You're my only contingency plan, Brightness." She nodded.
"Dalinar,"
Aladar said, sounding horrified as he watched the red eyes, which were forming into ordered ranks on the other side of the chasm.
"Tell me straight. When you brought us on this march, did you expect to find these horrors?"
"Yes." It was true enough. He didn't know what horrors he'd find, but he had known that something was coming.
"You came anyway," Aladar demanded. "You hold us all the way out onto these cursed plains. You let us be surrounded by monsters to be slaughtered, and—"
Dalinar grabbed Aladar by the front of the jacket and hauled him forward. The move caught the other man completely off guard, and he quieted, eyes widening.
"Those are void bringers out there,"
Dalinar hissed, rain dribbling down his face.
"They've returned. Yes, it is true. And we, Aladar, we have a chance to stop them." I don't know if we can prevent another desolation, but I'd do anything, including sacrificing myself and this entire army, to protect Alethkar from those things. Do you understand?
Aladar nodded, wide-eyed.
I hoped to get here before this happened, but I didn't. So now we're going to fight. And Stormont, we're going to destroy those things. We're going to stop them, and we're going to hope that will stop this evil from spreading to the world's parshmen, as my niece feared. If you survive this day, you'll be known as one of the greatest men of our generation.
He released Aladar, letting the High Prince stumble back.
Go to your men, Aladar. Go lead them. Be a champion.
Aladar stared at Dalinar, mouth gaping. Then he straightened. He slapped his arm to his chest, giving a salute as crisp as any Dalinar had seen.
It will be done, Bright Lord, Aladar said. High Prince of War.
Aladar barked to his attendants, including Mintez, the High Lord that Aladar usually had use his shard plate in battle, then put his hand to his side sword and dashed away in the rain.
Ha,
Sabariel said from beneath his umbrella.
He's actually buying into it. He thinks he's going to be a storming hero.
He now knows I was right about the need to unify Alethkar. He's a good soldier. Most of the High Princes are, or were, at some point.
Pity you ended up with us two instead of them, Sabariel said, nodding toward Rohaon, who still stared out at the shifting red eyes.
They were thousands now, still increasing as more Parshendi arrived. Scouts reported that they were gathering on all three plateaus bordering the large one that the Alethi occupied.
I'm useless in a battle, Sabariel continued, and Rohaon's archers will be wasted in this rain. Besides, he's a coward.
Rohaon is not a coward, Dalinar said, laying a hand on the shorter High Prince's arm. He's careful. That did not serve him well in the squabbling over gem hearts, where men like Sadius threw away lives in exchange for prestige. But out here, care is an attribute I'd choose over recklessness.
Rohaon turned to Dalinar, blinking away water.
Is this really happening?
Yes, Dalinar said. I want you with your men, Rohaon. They need to see you. This is going to terrify them, but not you. You're careful, in control.
Yeah, Rohaon said. Yes, you... You're going to get us out of this, right?
No, I'm not, Dalinar said.
Rohaon frowned.
We're all going to get ourselves out of it together.
Rohaon nodded and didn't object. He saluted as Aladar had, if less crisply, then headed toward his army on the northern flank, calling for his aides to give him the numbers of his reserves.
Damnation, Sabariel said, watching Rohaon go. Damnation! What about me? Where's my impassioned speech?
You, Dalinar said, ought to go back to the command tent and not get in the way.
Sabariel laughed.
All right. That I can do.
I want Taleb in command of your army, Dalinar said, and I'm sending both Sarugiatus and Rust to join him. Your men will fight better against these things with a few shard-bearers at their head.
All three were men who had been given shards following Adolin's dueling spree.
I'll give the order that Taleb is to be obeyed.
And Sabariel? Dalinar asked.
Yes.
If you have a mind for it, burn some prayers. I don't know if anyone up there is listening anymore, but it can't hurt.
Dalinar turned toward the sea of red eyes. Why were they just standing there watching? Sabariel hesitated.
Not as confident as you acted to the other two, eh?
He smiled, as if that comforted him, then sauntered off. What a strange man. Dalinar nodded to one of his aides, who went to give the orders to the three Colin shard-bearers, first picking Sarugiatus, a lanky young man whose sister Adolin had once courted, out of his command post along the ranks, then running off to fetch Taleb and explain Dalinar's orders. That scene, too, Dalinar stepped up to Navani.
I need to know you're safe in the command tent,
as safe as anyone can be.
Then pretend I'm there, she said.
But
you want my help with Fabrials? Navani said. I can't set up that sort of thing remotely, Dalinar.
He ground his teeth, but what could he say? He was going to need every edge he could get. He looked out at the red eyes again.
Campfire tales come alive, said Rock,
the massive horn-eater bridgeman. Dalinar had never seen that one guarding him or his sons. He was a quartermaster, Dalinar believed.
These things should not be. Why do they not move?
I don't know, Dalinar said. Send a few of your men to fetch Relaine. I want to see if he can provide any explanations. As two bridgemen ran off, Dalinar turned to Navani.
Gather your scribes to write my words. I will speak to the soldiers.
Within moments, she had a pair of scribes, shivering as they stood under umbrellas with pencils out to write, ready to record his words. They'd send women down the lines and read his message to all the men. Dalinar climbed into Gallant's saddle to get a little height. He turned toward the ranks of men nearby.
Yes,
he shouted over the sound of the rain.
These are void bringers. Yes, we're going to fight them. I don't know what they can do. I don't know why they've returned. But we came here to stop them. I know you're scared, but you have heard of my visions in the high storms. In the war camps, the Light Eyes mocked me and dismissed what I'd seen as delusions.
He thrust his arm to the side, pointing at the sea of red eyes.
Well, out there, you see proof that my visions were true. Out there, you see what I have been told would come.
Dalinar licked wet lips. He had given many battlefield speeches in his life, but never had he said anything like what came to him now.
He shouted, have been sent by the Almighty himself to save this land from another desolation. I have seen what those things can do. I have lived lives broken by the void bringers. I've seen kingdoms shattered, peoples ruined, technology forgotten. I've seen civilization itself brought to the trembling edge of collapse. We will prevent this. Today, you fight not for the wealth of a Light Eyes, or even for the honor of your king. Today, you fight for the good of all men. You will not fight alone. Trust in what I have seen. Trust in my words. If those things have returned, then so must the forces that once defeated them. We will see miracles before this day is out, men. We merely have to be strong enough to deserve them.
He looked across a sea of hopeful eyes. Storms. Were those glories spread around his head, spinning like golden spheres in the rain? His scribes finished writing down the short speech, then hurriedly started making copies to send with runners. Dalinar watched them go, hoping to the tranquiline halls that he hadn't just lied to everyone. His force seemed small in this darkness, surrounded by enemies. Soon he heard his own words being spoken in the distance, read out to the troops. Dalinar remained seated, Shallan beside his horse, though Navani moved off to see to several of her contraptions. The battle plan called for them to wait a little longer, and Dalinar was content to do so. With these chasms to cross, it was far better to be assaulted than to assault. Perhaps the separate armies forming up would encourage the Parshendi to start the battle by coming to him. Fortunately, the rain meant no arrows. The bowstrings wouldn't stand the dampness, nor would the animal glue in the Parshendi recurve bows. The Parshendi started singing. It came in a sudden roar over the rains, startling his men, making them shy backward in a wave. The song wasn't one Dalinar had ever heard during plateau runs. This was more staccato, more frenetic. It rose all around, coming from the three surrounding plateaus, shouted like thrown axes at the Alethi in the center. Dalinar shivered. Wind blew against him, stronger than was normal during the weeping.
The gust drove raindrops against the side of his face. Cold bit his skin.
Bright Lord!
Dalinar turned in his saddle, noting four bridgemen approaching along with Relaine. He still had the man under guard at all times. He waved for his guards to part, allowing the Parshendi bridgeman to scramble up to his horse.
That song, Relaine said. That song!
What is it, man?
It is death,
Relaine whispered.
Bright Lord, I have never heard it before, but the rhythm is one of destruction, of power.
Across the chasm, the Parshendi started to glow. Tiny lines of red sparked around their arms, blinking and shaking like lightning.
What is that?
Shallan asked. Dalinar narrowed his eyes, and another burst of wind washed over him.
You have to stop it, Relaine said. Please, even if you have to kill them, do not let them finish that song.
It was the day of the countdown he had scribbled on the walls without knowing. The last day. Dalinar made his decision based on instinct. He called for a messenger, and one jogged up, Deshav's ward, a girl in her 15th year.
Pass the word, he commanded her. Send a general call at the command tent, the battalion lords, my son, Taleb, and the other high princes. We're changing strategies.
Bright Lord?
The messenger asked.
What change?
We attack. Now!
Kaladin stopped at the entrance to the light-eyed training grounds, rainwater streaming off his umbrella's waxed cloth, surprised at what he saw. In preparation for a storm, the Ardents normally swept and shoveled the sand into covered trenches at the edges of the ground to keep it from being blown away. He had expected to see something similar during the weeping. Instead, they had left the sand out, but had then placed a short wooden barrier across the gateway in. It plugged the front of the sparring grounds, allowing them to fill up with water. A small cascade of rainwater poured over the lip of the barrier and into the roadway. Kaladin regarded the small lake that now filled the courtyard, then sighed and reached down, undoing his laces, then pulling off both boots and socks. When he stepped in, the cold water came up to his calves. Soft sand squished between his toes. What was the purpose of this? He crossed the courtyard, crutch under his arm, boots joined by the laces and slung over his shoulder. The chill water numbed his wounded foot, which actually felt nice, though his leg still hurt with each step. It seemed that the 2 weeks of healing hadn't done much for his wounds. His continued insistence that he walk so much probably wasn't helping. He'd been spoiled by his abilities. A soldier with such a wound normally would take months to recover. Without Stormlight, he'd just have to be patient and heal like everyone else. He had expected to find the training grounds as abandoned as most of the camp. Even the markets were relatively empty, people preferring to remain indoors during the weeping. Here, however, he found the Ardents laughing and chatting as they sat in chairs in the raised arcades framing the sparring grounds. They sewed leather practice jerkins, cups of auburn wine, on tables at their sides. That area rose enough above the yard floor to stay dry. Kaladin walked along, searching among them, but didn't find Zyle. He even peeked in the man's room, but it was empty.
"Up above, bridgeman,"
one of the Ardents called. The bald woman pointed toward the stairwell at the corner, where Kaladin had often sent guards to secure the roof when Adolin and Renarin practiced. Kaladin waved in thanks, then hobbled over and awkwardly made his way up the steps. He had to close his umbrella to fit. Rain fell on his head as he poked it out of the opening in the roof, where the stairwell ended. The roof was made of tile, set into hardened creme, and Zyle lay there in a hammock he'd strung between two poles. Kaladin thought they might be lightning rods, which didn't strike him as safe. A tarp hung above the hammock and kept Zyle almost dry. The Arden swung gently, eyes closed, holding a square bottle of hard honu, a type of lapis grain liquor. Kaladin inspected the rooftop, judging his ability to cross those sloped tiles without toppling off and breaking his neck.
Ever been to the Pure Lake, Bridgeman?
Zael asked. No, Kaladin said. One of my men talks about it, though.
What have you heard?
It's an ocean that's so shallow you can wade across it.
It's ridiculously shallow, Zael said. Like an endless bay, mere feet deep. Warm water, calm breezes. Reminds me of home. Not like this cold, damp, godforsaken place.
So why aren't you there instead of here?
Because I can't stand being reminded of home, idiot.
Oh. Why are we talking about it, then?
Because you were wondering why we made our own little Pure Lake down below.
I was?
Of course you were. Damnation, boy. I know you well enough by now to know that questions bother you. You don't think like a spearman.
Spearmen can't be curious?
No. Because if they are, they either get killed or they end up showing someone in charge how smart they are. Then they get put somewhere more useful.
Kaladin raised an eyebrow, waiting for more explanation. Finally he sighed and asked,
Why have you blocked off the courtyard below?
Why do you think?
You are a really annoying person, Zael. Do you realize that?
Sure do.
He took a drink of his honu.
I assume, Kaladin said, that you blocked off the front of the practice ground so that the rain wouldn't wash the sand away.
Excellent deduction, Zael said. Like fresh blue paint on a wall.
Whatever that means. The problem is, why is it necessary to keep the sand in the courtyard? Why not just put it away like you do before high storms?
Did you know, Zael said, that rains during the weeping don't drop creme?
Did he know that? Did it matter?
Good thing, too, Zael said, or our entire camp here would end up clogged with the stuff. Anyway, rain like this, it's great for washing.
You're telling me that you've turned the floor of the dueling grounds into a bath?
Sure did.
You wash in that?
Sure do. Not ourselves, of course.
Then what?
Sand.
Kaladin frowned, then peered over the side, looking at the pool below.
Every day, Zael said, we go in there and stir it up. The sand settles back down to the bottom, and all the yuck floats away, carried by the rain in little streams out of the camp. Did you ever consider that sand might need washing?
No, actually.
Well, it does. After a year's worth of being kicked by stinky bridgeman feet and equally stinky, but far more refined, Lydai's feet, after a year of having people like me spill food on it, or having animals find their way in here to do business, the sand needs cleaning.
Why are we talking about this?
Because it's important, Zael said, taking a drink. Or something. I don't know. You came to me, kid, interrupting my vacation. That means you have to listen to me blab.
You're supposed to say something profound.
Did you miss the part about me being on vacation?
Kaladin stood in the rain. Do you know where the king's wit is?
That fool Dust? Not here, blessedly. Why?
Kaladin needed someone to talk to, and had spent the better part of the day searching for wit. He hadn't found the man, though he had broken down and bought some chowta from a lonely street vendor. It had tasted good. That hadn't helped his mood. So, he'd given up on finding wit and had come to Zael instead. That appeared to have been a mistake. Kaladin sighed, turning back down the stairs.
What was it you wanted?
Zael called to him. The man had cracked an eye, looking toward Kaladin. Have you ever had to choose between two equally distasteful choices?
Every day I choose to keep breathing.
I worry something awful is going to happen, Kaladin said. I can prevent it, but the awful thing, it might be best for everyone if it does happen.
Huh,
Zael said. No advice? Kaladin asked.
Choose the option, Zyle said, rearranging his pillow. It makes it easiest for you to sleep at night.
The old Arden closed his eyes and settled back.
That's what I wish I'd done.
Kaladin continued down the steps. Below, he didn't get out his umbrella. He was already soaked anyway. Instead, he poked through the racks at the side of the practice grounds until he found a spear. Real, not practice. Then he set down his crutch and hobbled out into the water. There he fell into a spearman's stance and closed his eyes. Rain fell around him. It splattered in the water of the pool, sprinkled the rooftop, pattered the streets outside. Kaladin felt drained, like his blood had been sucked from him. The gloom made him want to sit still. Instead, he started dancing with the rain. He went through spear forms, doing his best to avoid putting weight on his wounded leg. He splashed in the waters. He sought peace and purpose in the comfortable forms. He didn't find either. His balance was off and his legs screamed. The rain didn't accompany him. It just annoyed him. Worse, the wind didn't blow. The air felt stale. Kaladin stumbled over his own feet. He twisted the spear about him, then dropped it clumsily. It spun away to splash into the pool. As he fetched it, he noticed the Ardens watching him with looks ranging from befuddled to amused. He tried again. Simple spear forms. No spinning the weapon, no showing off. Step, step, thrust. The spear's shaft felt wrong in his fingers. Off balance. Storms. He'd come here seeking solace, but he only grew more and more frustrated as he tried to practice. How much of his ability with the spear had come from his powers? Was he nothing without them? He dropped the spear again after trying a simple twist and thrust. He reached for it and found a rain spren sitting next to it in the water, looking upward, unblinking. He snatched the spear with a growl, then looked up toward the sky.
He deserves it,
he bellowed at those clouds. Rain pelted him.
Give me a reason why he doesn't,
Kaladin yelled, uncaring if the Ardens heard. It might not